Welcome to CDH Conversations. This conversation forms part of CDH's Woman Empowerment Podcast series, a series in which several members of our firm will be discussing all aspects of women empowerment and their experiences in the legal profession. My name is Tiffany Gray, and I'm a director in the dispute resolution practice. I have experience in commercial litigation and arbitration proceedings in various sectors, including providing clients with regulatory advice. My core focus areas are in the mining, oil and gas, and health and pharmaceutical industry. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Roxanne Webster, who's also a director in the dispute resolution practice. Welcome, Roxanne.
Thanks, Tiffany. I'm very excited about having this discussion with you and being as frank and honest and transparent as we can be in this podcast and seeing what value it can provide to others, because both of us are equally passionate about our careers, but also passionate about giving of ourselves to help other women.
I'm looking forward to it. So maybe let's kick off with a short introduction about yourself and your practice area.
So like you, I'm also a director in the dispute resolution department. I like to say litigation department as opposed to dispute resolution, because then people know what we're actually talking about, that we are litigators. But anyway, I also specialize in general commercial litigation, which includes for me corporate debt recovery, contractual disputes, shareholders disputes, etc. And this is in any industry or sector. I also specialize then in business rescue and insolvency. But Tiffany, I think we must dig a bit deeper into our experience. I know you also specialize in pharmaceuticals. Can you tell us a bit more about that? What has been an interesting case that you've worked on recently, and what type of clients do you assist?
So I assist various clients throughout the value chain within the health and pharmaceutical industry, as well as one of the largest nonprofit organizations that represents over 120 member companies who operate within the health supplement discipline specific, as well as the complementary medicine space within South Africa. I think an interesting case that comes to mind is a case where we successfully challenged the general regulations that were promulgated in terms of the Medicines Act. We challenged what the definition of complementary medicines is and debated whether the Minister of Health is empowered to regulate complementary medicines as defined in the draft regulations. The central assumption in the regulations was that complementary medicines are a subspecies of medicines as defined in the Act. In other words, the regulations assume that all products that fall within the ambit of the definition of complementary medicines, including health supplements, are also invariably medicines which can be regulated under the Act. The High Court, as well as the SEA, in that matter, agreed with us and found that the minister exceeded his powers in trying to regulate complementary medicines. I think a central issue in this matter was the minister had attempted to define complementary medicines in quite a wide manner, but we are currently in the process of commenting on the draft regulations wherein the minister is now seeking to fix the issue that we raised initially. But enough about that. I think apart from the general litigation work that you do, what has been a recent matter in the business rescue and insolvency area of specialization that you've particularly enjoyed working on?
So Tiffany, there's two matters which are very large matters and attract a fair amount of public interest. The first is where our team is acting for the business rescue practitioners of a large commercial real estate company, which has multiple commercial properties within South Africa. Some of them are well-known malls that we would all know about. And although the matter is stressful, I've enjoyed the complex issues that have arisen and also finding solutions for all stakeholders. Another matter that is quite recent is the liquidation and business rescue of the post office. The post office, as we know, was placed into liquidation, and then the Minister of Digital Communications instituted an application to place the post office in business rescue in the hopes that it and thousands of jobs may then be saved. There we acted for the post office retirement fund, and they won't mind me saying it, who had a claim against the post office for over R1 billion. And we've intervened in the minister's application to support the placing of the post office in business rescue, which was then granted by the court. So that is a great outcome for the post office and the employees, because the post office, as we know, plays quite a pivotal role in assisting the state with providing access to social security. But Tiffany, let's move aside from ourselves for a moment and our careers. Maybe let's look at more of our personal journey. Can you tell us a bit more about where you're from and what university you studied at?
So I am originally from PE, or should I say Kabeja. We stayed in an area called Aspen Heights, which we generally refer to as the northern areas, which is a predominantly colored area. I am one of four children, and I think one of the unique aspects of my childhood is that because of the type of work that my parents do, we moved around quite a bit, resulting in me attending six different schools in about three different provinces. But ultimately, I matriculated from a high school in Pretoria and decided to study at the University of Pretoria. I recall there being a career day at the university where the CDH HR team were taking applications for the VAC program and articles. I participated in the VAC program in 2011 and commenced my articles at CDH in 2013 and have been here ever since. So I'm what we refer to as a homegrown CDHer. But I believe that you studied at WITS. Tell us more about your personal journey leading up to university, as well as your decision to ultimately pursue a profession in law.
So I grew up in a colored area in Johannesburg called Innerdale, and I know many people will not know where that is, but it's a colored township, and I will have to say a colored township because it definitely wasn't a suburb. From my family perspective, it's very unusual because I'm only a child, one of two children, let me say that, and we know back then people had tended to have a lot more children than what they could afford, especially, but particularly because the cost of living back then, it was not as high as it is now. So although my family struggled quite a bit financially in the earlier years of my life, education always remained a top priority for my parents. So they did their best in placing us in good Model C schools outside of where we stayed. So there, I also learned the value of education through them, because they too weren't born in families with opportunities. So they had to find themselves basic jobs, which they could then use. They used their salaries in order to pay for their studies. So I remember them sitting up late at night for many years, studying towards their respective diplomas or degrees. And I think that instilled in me the value of education, because then it allowed them to get better jobs and then move us into the suburbs. On your question of why I studied law, I honestly, if you ask me now, I don't know. But I think I remember a series called Judging Amy back then. And that intrigued me because there was a judge who used the law to help people. So that piqued my interest. And now I can say I actually do have a passion for the law. And although it's challenging, we know, I wouldn't change that decision.
That's a very interesting background story. And I think this podcast is also helping me getting to know my colleagues better. But tell me, how did you end up at CDH?
So how I ended up at CDH, I knew nothing about top five law firms, and that working at one of the top five firms was a thing or a goal that we needed to achieve. But anyway, I just went onto Google and searched on the internet for all the law firms in Johannesburg. And then I started compiling my applications. And then I remember asking my mother to fax some of my applications, because fax was around still at that time. And some of them required a fax. So she would then go to work and she would fax my applications. And luckily, CDH fell for it. But Tiffany, let's maybe talk more about women empowerment and what advice we can give to women. So what would you say to a woman who would look at your life and think that being a Black female at one of the top five law firms in the country is simply unachievable given their backgrounds or their circumstances?
I always live by the phrase that anything is possible if you set your mind to it and work hard, even though the odds are against you. I know many people may say that it's easier said than done, but I recall when I was approaching the end of my matric year, my parents already had two children in university and gave me the option to take a gap year before going to university in order to give them sufficient time to raise the funds before having to pay the university fees for a third child or to take out a study loan. And although I did very well at school, I did not consider the bursary route because I think I took it for granted that my parents would pay for me to go to university. But after our discussion, I decided that I rather one to take a study loan as opposed to taking a gap year and go straight to university. I think that decision has definitely played a significant role in shaping me into the person I am today, because it made me work even harder to secure a bursary from my second year and made me the driven, resilient person I am today. I think if I took a gap year, I may not have had the discipline to go back. In addition to that, none of my family or friends were in the legal profession, so I knew I had to study hard to secure my articles and to get into a good law firm. The legal profession is a challenging and rewarding career path, but it can also be a demanding and competitive one. My advice would be to be confident and assertive in your career goals and aspirations. You should not let stereotypes, biases, or discrimination discourage you or hold you back. I know earlier we spoke about what led you to pursue a career in law and that you knew you were making the right decision. What advice would you give a young female professional that would assist her in navigating their way through this predominantly male-dominated industry?
Sure, Tiffany, that's a tough one, because I think you'd appreciate that although we've been in this profession for some time now, as you progress in your career and as you achieve certain levels of seniority, there's new challenges at each level. But I think first of all, we must recognize that our society, and in fact, our world, has made a lot of progress in moving away from the narrative that a woman's place belongs in the kitchen, and as they say, barefooted and pregnant. I remember my grandmother telling me back then that a woman could only find a job in the sewing factories because that's generally the only places where they were allowed to work. And I'm sure many people have those stories, and I'm sure you can share some as well. But I think what is important to recognize is that we've come a long way since then. But I will say this, is that as a young female, and sometimes because of our backgrounds, we feel inferior or like a man's voice is more important, which will lead us to shy away in the background. But that's wrong. I think as young females, we need to realize that we too have a voice, and to use that voice, but use it skillfully. And why I say skillfully is because you need to gauge the environment, you need to gauge your audience, and you need to gauge the moment and adapt to what is necessary in that moment to bring your point or your voice across. So I think it's important for young women to take up space, take up opportunities, even if you feel inadequate, and do it as often as you can, because the more you do it, the more opposition you're going to face, and the higher you go, the more opposition you'll face, but the more resilient you will become. Building resilience in a male-dominated industry, for me, is key. It will allow you to push through even when you are told no. It's going to allow you to push through even when you are overlooked or discouraged or disregarded. And even when you are made to believe that you are wrong, you can, or that you can add no value. So the resilience, for me, I think is key. Tiffany, but you've also practiced now for a number of years. Do you think there is still some progress that we need to make in providing a corporate environment where women can thrive? Or do you think that our current landscape is sufficient enough and we just actually need more women who are going to, like they say, grab the bull by their horns and be courageous enough and to make this career or any career in the corporate environment a success?
I think we've obviously made great strides in not only the corporate environment, but also the legal profession. I mean, this year we're celebrating 100 years of women in law. But I think women in the legal profession in particular face many challenges and obstacles that hinder their career and advancement, as well as their success. I think some of these hurdles are the gender stereotypes, discrimination, harassment, as well as work-life issues. And I think ultimately also a lack of mentorship with limited access to leadership opportunities. But I think women as a collective need to challenge the existing norms and structures that perpetuate this gender inequality and bias and demand more accountability and transparency from their employers and colleagues. And by doing so, we will create a more diverse and inclusive legal profession that benefits not only women, but also their clients, organizations, and the society at large. But Roxanne, given what I have just said, do you feel that being a female in a male-dominated profession requires you to consistently prove yourself in order to be taken seriously or to demonstrate your expertise?
100%, Tiffany. And I'm going to speak from my perspective. And I don't know if it's just because I'm female or because I'm a female of color. I don't know. But maybe other females can help us with this question. But I constantly feel like I have to prove myself. And constantly, as they say, stay on your A game, which means that I either need to be the hardest working person in the room or the most competent person. Sometimes I need to actually make the same point 3 or 4 times before I'm actually heard or taken seriously. Sometimes I'm sitting in meetings and I'm the only female and the rest are all older males, and I'll be told publicly that my points are wrong. But when sanity and competence actually prevails, and they realize that I'm not wrong, the apology then won't be public. So yes, I think it's a constant battle, because although, as I said previously, society has progressed a lot, some men unfortunately still have that archaic way of thinking. And in order to change that, we as women need to not feel discouraged, but I think we need to continue to push through those barriers and those biases. We need to change their way of thinking. And the only way we can do that, I think, is by continuing to do our best, by continuing to be the best, and continuing to add value, even if we think we are not. Tiffany, what would you say you do to empower yourself and empower the women around you?
When I was younger, I used to be extremely quiet and an introvert, which led many people to exploit me or take advantage of situations because I never used to stand up for myself. But later in my life and career, I realized that if I don't stand up for myself, no one else will. So I started embracing my diversity and uniqueness by expressing myself authentically and confidently. This helped me demonstrate not only do I deserve a seat at the table, but my voice and opinion matters. This now sets the tone for how people engage me, which has significantly helped me empower myself and advocate for myself. Women's empowerment is a critical goal for achieving gender equality and sustainable development. I now use my past learnings to help foster a culture of respect and inclusion that values women's contributions and perspectives in all respects and persistently challenge the stereotypes and norms that limit their potential, like the statement that females should only deal with family law and divorces. No, we are taking up space in the sectors and the practice areas which were historically reserved for males. I also dedicate a lot of time to training and mentoring the junior professionals within our organization, with a special focus on females. And to the extent that I need to brief counsel in any of my matters, I always opt to appoint Black females as my first preference, because I realized over time that hard work needs to meet opportunity for the advancement of females within the profession, and opportunities are often very limited. I therefore try to create learning opportunities that can enhance their skills and knowledge to ensure that we ultimately tip the scales. I am also a member of the Women in Mining South Africa organization, which is a platform that creates an empowering network to inspire, support, and develop the progression of women working within the South African mining industry. Having said that, we cannot achieve this goal alone. We need the support and collaboration of male allies who are willing to challenge the status quo and advocate for women's rights and opportunities. I am fortunate enough to have male allies within the organization, and I advise women to seek out male allies that can advocate and support their development. Male allies should recognize their privilege and use it to promote women's empowerment, which can take various forms. Something as simple as listening to women's voices and experiences and respecting their perspectives and expertise. But Roxanne, what would you have said, having discussed all our personal experiences? What are the personal experiences or the reasons that have motivated you to care so much about women empowerment?
So Tiffany, I think we'll be sitting here the whole day if I or you had to share our personal experiences over the year. And I think we may need a bottle of wine or two, and we don't have enough time for that. But what I have found is that both in your personal and professional life, men can't really fully support you because they don't understand the genetic makeup or the psychology of a woman. So like you, I do have male allies that support me, But it's just, they won't fully support you because they just don't understand. And that's perfectly fine. And that's where I find that it becomes so important for us women to step up and be our own support. So that's why I think for me, it's important for us as women to see each other as a community and not as competition. And why I say community, because in those close circle of friends or family where you feel safe to just exhale and vent, and I think it's in the corporate environment where we have to create a similar safe space and environment where we invite other women to share, listen, and motivate each other. So in me trying to create that community of safe space, I tend to talk a lot about my personal experiences and create an environment where other women too, who I come across, can feel free to open up to me. Because as cliche as it sounds, women empowerment can only really start with constant conversation, and knowledge and other people's experiences can actually empower you. So on top of that, I also do a lot with training our juniors, but I also take the mentorship program at CDH quite seriously. I have a mentee for quite a number of years now who has access to me probably 24/7. She can call or WhatsApp whenever she feels she needs help or has an issue or just needs to vent. And I think both as a mentee and a mentor, you actually have to both be invested in the process to actually make it work and empower young ladies starting in the profession. And I actually wish I had a mentor in my earlier parts of my career. But other than that, also, I'm on the board of an International Women's Insolvency and Restructuring Confederation of South Africa. And it's again just a community of women in the insolvency and restructuring space where we are trying to create and encourage women into action and conversation. But, you know, Tiffany, I've always had this feeling for many years now that I want to create my own community of women who are passionate about helping other women and always create a program or something where these young girls, either in school or just starting out in varsity or just doesn't know what they want to do with their lives, where they have access to like-minded women like us who can encourage them and speak to them and also then shape their worldview, because it's at that tender age that is so significant in a young woman's life that may change the course of their life for the better. But that's a whole topic for another day, Tiffany. There's this work-life balance phrase that is often used, but I don't know if it's actually experienced. Why do you think women in particular have great difficulty with this?
I think, Roxanne, you know, work-life balance is like a swear word in the corporate environment. So I think we all experience it. But I think women in particular have great difficulty with this. And I think it's because when we start considering starting a family, we are often placed in a very difficult position where we need to decide whether it's the right time to start a family or whether we should continue pushing through in order to excel in our careers. Since this profession is so competitive, you're constantly pushing yourself to do better in order to excel. And when it comes time to start a family, not only are women often the primary caregivers, but we also need to manage a household and focus on our career to keep up with our male counterparts in this competitive environment. So ultimately, work-life balance becomes more difficult to attain because we're simply juggling too many balls. But I think for the most part, women have demonstrated that this is absolutely possible and we are doing it and will continue to do so.
I couldn't agree more. I think we can have it all. We just need the proper support, but we can have it all. Tiffany, I think both of us are very passionate about our careers, progressing in our careers, but also being a part of the change we would like to see. So I've enjoyed this conversation. I think it's important conversations to have, and maybe depending on whether people like this or not, we can do more of it. But in closing, for me, I think it's important that as women, we build resilience, but also remain resilient, because resilience will be the catalyst for the breakthrough we want to see in corporate South Africa. And it's that corporate South Africa that we would be happy to send our daughters into without feeling worried or anxious about what they may experience.
I think my only closing remarks would be to state that, you know, women empowerment is not just a slogan, because we all talk about women empowerment, but a reality that can be achieved by every woman who believes in themselves and their potential. You have the power to shape your own destiny, to overcome any challenges and to make a positive impact in the world.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.